This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. Before we get started, I just want to take a moment to address the elephant in the recording closet. You may have heard that Only a Game is ending in September after a 27-year run. But never fear, we have some amazing episodes planned between now and then. You're really not going to want to miss them. Meanwhile, there's a lot to talk about this week, especially regarding the Black Lives Matter movement and athletes speaking out against racism. So we're going to begin our show with three stories you should know. I'm thrilled to welcome back the Washington Post Jerry Brewer and The Athletic's Michael Lee. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jerry, you want to talk about Oklahoma State head football coach Mike Gundy. Can you start us off?
Well, Michael and Karen, if you Google dumb things Mike Gundy has said, you get 301,000 results. You know, since the outbreak of the coronavirus, he has said that, you know, his players need to get back in on campus and help funnel money through the state of Oklahoma. He had to apologize for that. This week, he was caught wearing a One America News Network t-shirt. One America News is a right-wing network that spreads often flat lies and has consistently been opposed to the Black Lives Matter movement. He allowed himself to be photographed wearing it. It enraged his players. His star player, Chuba Hubbard, maybe the best running back in college football, took to social media and simply said, "This is a slap in our face. We demand better." Ultimately, Chuba and Mike Gundy meet. They have this ridiculous video in which Chuba apologizes.
"I'll start off by first saying that I went about it the wrong way by tweeting. I should have went to him as a man."
Mike Gundy does not apologize. He just accepts it.
"I realize it's a very sensitive issue with what's going on in today's society."
Says we're going to move forward. And then a day later, after criticism that would make Drew Brees even blush, Mike Gundy officially apologizes, and it was a fairly weak apology. The larger question, however, is in this movement, in this Black Lives Matter movement, it's predominantly led by young people and college students, prospective college athletes should use this moment to scrutinize who they're going to be playing for more.
I mean, yeah, I think players are starting to understand their power. Players are starting to recognize that these coaches are making millions of dollars and we're not seeing any of it. You know, you need to take care of us. And the fact that he called them out on Twitter, they have a lot of ways to sort of spread their message. This is a new generation and they see just the professional athletes sort of setting the tone that they're no longer going to be silent. And I will say this about that apology. You can't have a sincere apology where it looks like a hostage video. And you can't look like you're reading from a script if people are going to believe you. The apology probably did more damage than any good because no one believed that he was sincere in anything that he said.
Yeah, I want to continue to talk about that apology, and we're going to play a little clip.
"I had a great meeting with our team today. Our players expressed their feelings as individuals and as team members. They helped me see through their eyes how the t-shirt affected their hearts."
I mean, he just sounds so scripted and so fake. I really do not believe that he's actually sorry about anything. And Jerry, to your point, he's clearly just saying this so he doesn't immediately lose his entire recruiting class, right?
Yes, he's trying to save face. In a lot of ways, he's trying to save his job. And now everyone's looking back into your past and they're was a report when he was the quarterback at Oklahoma State from 1989 of him using the N-word and upsetting some opponents. The OAN t-shirt in connection with how callous he has been about humanity, not just issues affecting Black people, but just humanity in general. You know, how you can talk about running money through the state of Oklahoma, and that's the reason that your players who don't get compensated on anything other than a scholarship, that they got to come back to campus. You know, all of his actions give more credibility that this is someone that on issues of humanity cannot be trusted.
Absolutely. All right, Michael, you're next.
Well, we all know that the world shut down the moment the NBA decided that it was going to suspend its season after the discovery that Rudy Gobert contracted COVID-19. Well, now the NBA wants to come back, and they've chosen to go to Orlando, where all dreams come true. The 22 teams that go down to the NBA's bubble are going to be staying in, you know, the resorts. Teams with better records get better hotels. Some players have, like Dwight Howard, have said that it's not the time to be playing, so they want to not play at all to continue to drive the Black Lives Matter agenda. The NBA is in a tough spot because, on one hand, they have to respect the players. You know, you have a predominantly Black league. Black Lives Matter movement directly affects them and their families and their loved ones. But then you have this coronavirus, which is something that threatened to shut down this entire nation. And even though nothing has happened to give us any encouragement that we've passed, you know, this first wave of COVID, they're trying to play basketball through it, which could put their players' health at risk. And I'm just wondering if they're actually going to pull this off, because it just seems just too ambitious.
This is an incredibly difficult one, because I do think that there is value in coming back now, particularly in giving your players, your star players, your most prominent players, the LeBron Jameses of the league, the platform to speak to the cause. And it's going to need a boost at some point. People's stamina for marching and for demanding change is going to minimize. And in a perfect world, it would be a perfect time for the NBA to rise in Disney and just show this wonderful Mickey Mouse world, you know, the right way to do things. However, the risks are tremendous. We have to mention that Adam Silver's plan has been supported by epidemiologists and other health experts as being incredibly thorough. What they cannot do is give it more than a decent chance of working, because we just don't know enough about this virus to know what the long-term effects exactly are. And my concern, in addition to the appropriateness of it and the message that you're sending the world, is they know that they have a decent chance of preventing just a wildfire spread of it. But they can't say for certain that if LeBron James gets this, what the damage exactly is going to be to his lungs and if he'll come back and be the same player.
I'm really fascinated by the confluence of concerns here, right? It's not just one thing. There are the safety concerns related to COVID-19, but also safety concerns related to, like, springing into the end of the season after a long layoff, you know, injury concerns. There are very understandable concerns about players being asked to spend so much time away from friends and family. And then, of course, there is the argument that, near as I can tell, this sentiment hasn't been this strong since maybe the lead up to the 68 Olympic Games, where athletes are saying, maybe now is not the time to be entertaining people. Maybe now it's time to be heard by refusing to play. Michael, were you able to get a sense of which of these factors is most at play here?
I believe that the social justice aspect is actually the one that's most at play. A lot of players aren't intimidated by contracting coronavirus. They feel like they have the immune systems to sort of get through it and be okay. I mean, you got to remember at least 15 players had the coronavirus or tested positive for it. So they feel like they could survive that. There is a lot of resistance to the restrictions. And then being away from your family the first 7 weeks, you won't really be able to be in contact with them. So there is a resistance from that end. But then the health aspect of it, too. You mentioned injury a little bit earlier. And for me, just honestly, when you think about how terrible this season has been for the NBA, beginning with China.
They are in hot water in China. And that's over a tweet supporting pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. And it's
then you had David Stern passing, you had Kobe Bryant passing, which really struck a lot of these guys emotionally. And the league has just been pushing through. Then you had COVID come. For me, I sort of felt like this is an unnecessary gamble. It's like you're at the craps table, you've lost all your money, and all you got left is your watch. And now the NBA is like, we got to get this $1 billion, and all we have is this watch to gamble, but we're going to put that watch on the table. I just don't know if it's the right time, considering what's happening in Orlando, in Orange County in particular, where the virus is raging stronger than ever.
All right, so I want to talk about something that came up as we were recording interviews for next week's show, which, by the way, is all about sports racism and the myth of meritocracy. Anyway, one of our guests, Kirsten Heckstrom, who studies this sort of thing at the University of Oklahoma, had a suggestion for what our next special episode should be, also related to the Black Lives Matter movement.
I hope you're going to do one on just the blatant hypocrisy of college coaches who are saying they are for these movements, yet are asking predominantly Black athletes to come back during COVID.
There's a great piece in the Wall Street Journal this week about the risks of bringing back football in particular. Football teams are very large, social distancing is impossible, and many football players fall into at-risk groups. Many of them are Black, and Blacks have been disproportionately dying from this disease. Many of them have high body mass indexes and sleep apnea. So is Kirsten right? Is it hypocritical to be saying Black Lives Matter while also saying practice begins at 10, Jerry?
For amateur athletes, quote unquote amateur athletes, college athletes and lower, I would say yes. In the professional ranks, you have to collectively bargain it. And so I think in that sense, you have a voice. I think it is an embarrassment the way that college athletics is handling it. I mean, they're already got these kids back on campus and they're telling other students that campus is not safe enough to be on. I haven't heard any college coaches say, it's okay if you don't come back, we'll keep your scholarship for you. They're not going to say that. I think what they're doing is both premature and irresponsible. And to do it at any level lower, you know, we start getting into high school and then you start getting into, you know, little league. That is malpractice, the way I look at it.
I don't know if I can add any more than Jerry just said. He broke it all the way down to the very last compound. I will say that it's really reckless because you know that these players are coming from, a lot of these players are coming from environments where this is their hope for an education. This is a hope for a better life, possibly a hope for the NFL, and they're trying to get somewhere. So when you hold that carrot in front of them, that if you want to have success in life, then this is what you have to do, then you leave them no option and you put their lives at danger. If people wind up dying because of this, I mean, who's going to be to blame? We can't point it at these kids. We have to point it to the adults who know that they're putting them at risk.
I could not possibly say it any better than that. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Washington Post's Jerry Brewer and The Athletic's Michael Lee. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Hey, thank you.
After the Arab Spring, Tunisia banned all large gatherings, which meant fans weren't allowed to attend sporting events.
The fear was that anytime people were allowed to gather in those kinds of numbers, it might turn political and they wouldn't be able to contain it.
How one Tunisian soccer team made its empty stadium sound less empty. Coming up on Only a Game from NPR.